when I started looking at 57, I realized I had done it so long ago that I had forgotten how it connected to 56. And then as I read it, I kept thinking, how on earth does this make sense? So I went back and I looked at the scholarship. So it's what happens when you write something and then you teach something six verses, and you can't ever get to where you are in the future. And I want to remind you, I probably told you this, I hope I told you this, that this section, 56 through 59, so hopefully we will finish through 59 this semester, falls into four parts. So chapter 56, half of it, is a vision of the worldwide inclusive Sabbath people. Do you remember we talked about the meaning of the Sabbath, what it means to us, how we keep the Sabbath, what God meant for his people to do, how they failed to do it, but also the heart of it, which is to honor God as God, and how it shows forth your commitment to God by giving up that day, that sacrifice, but also causes you to submit your life to God by setting aside that point, so that time. And then the fact that we were talking about the vision of the worldwide people, we were talking about the Gentiles as well as the Jews. And we went back and looked at the New Testament and how that was such a shock to the Jews that God would create another people beside them to receive him, plus not to mention the whole world. And then chapter 56, through half of it, through all of 57, which is where we're going to be today, follows this vision of this worldwide inclusive people that is coming after the exile, after the return, is balanced by the actual state of that community that they're in, he's in when they return, that it will be divided, it will be hostile, it will be a mixture of the righteous and the compromisers. And that's what we're going to talk about today. I want to bring a little comparison of that to you. So Isaiah, who is in 700 B.C. So I'm going to do this over here. So this is how this falls. Isaiah is living in 700 B.C. Actually, you know, it's like 735, but give or take. And so the history records for us not his death, but stories of his death, that he died in the reign of Manasseh. He was sawn in two. So if you think preaching this was popular among the leaders, it wasn't. So he dies as a martyr. So say he dies, and that would be about 735. So that's a five. So he is prophesying about events that are going to happen to Judah, which will be the destruction by Nebuchadnezzar in 605 through 589. This is how long it took Nebuchadnezzar to conquer them and then finally to just wipe them out. And then the return under Cyrus in 335. And in that return, this is the return to Jerusalem from exile. And who wrote about this return? Well, Daniel was here. So this is where Daniel is. Oh, yes, ma'am. Nehemiah and Ezra. So this is where those books fall. Isaiah is prophesying about things 100 years from him, from his life, and almost 300 years from his life. So as he writes about this, now he's going to die in about 35. He's prophesying now about this community that has returned. He has been threatening them with this exile. It's coming if you don't shape up. It's coming if you don't follow God. It's coming. Now he's prophesying And he's talking about what this returned community is going to be like. This is what 56 and through 59 is about. It's this group of people that he's talking about. That makes it very hard if you just read as if it's one story, but realizing that he's talking about different visions that God's giving him about what's going to happen in history, this is when he's talking about it. I hope that's going to make this helpful. In talking about that community that's going to come back from exile is going to be divided, it's going to be hostile, and it's going to be a mixture, Jesus would say, of sheep and goats. When we get to chapter 58, please God, next week, there's going to be a return to that same Sabbath theme that we had in 56 as the ideal life for the Lord's people. And when we get to 59, he'll have confessions of failure. So as we go through this section, now I want to point this out because scholars, liberal scholars, talk about this sort of higgledy-piggledy conversation that's going on as this can't possibly be Isaiah. Although the language is the same, the themes are the same. These are the same themes that have gone all the way through. But because it's kind of jumping from one subject to another, and remember, Isaiah didn't write it in chapters. And in Hebrew, you don't have punctuation, by the way. So you don't have periods. So you got to just figure out where the sentence ends. So it would probably be even more confusing if we were reading it directly from the Hebrew. So this is where they start saying, well, this third chapter, this is not Isaiah. Guess what? It is. Okay. So today, we're going to observe that unity. We just have started. And today I picked for the verse, O my comforter in sorrow, my heart is faint within me. Listen to the cry of my people from a land far away. Is the Lord not in Zion? Is he her king no longer? Why have they provoked me to anger with their images and with their worthless foreign idols? Which is what we get. They're longing for the Lord, but they're divided, hostile, and they're not faithful. What a shock. From Isaiah 1, he has talked about they're not being faithful. And then, Isaiah 56 to 66, the community is under inadequate leadership. This is when they return. They will be spiritually divided. There's going to be much evidence of false religion on one hand and of spiritual longing on the other. And all the way through then, Isaiah's going to be speaking God's encouragement into this longing. He himself will intervene. He will bring healing, peace, and provision. And Zion will become glorious. The focus of all the earth, it will become the center of the new creation. And it will be the focal of the expectation of the coming of the Messiah, the anointed creator, the coming of salvation and vengeance. That's the whole rest of the book. And that's built on where we are now. So this is how it all ties together. And you can see how this flows out of, you know, the whole expectation of the Messiah that comes through from Isaiah 40 all the way to 56. So, okay, are we all okay with where we're going to start? Okay. Any questions about that?
What's the reference for the verse of today?
Oh, I didn't put it down. It's Isaiah. It is Isaiah 8, believe it or not, 18 and 19. So I have a homework assignment for you. I would like you to each, for next week, write down what your favorite verse has been. I'm going to have a hard time coming up with one. I may have to write more than one. Your favorite verse has been in Isaiah. Because we've had so many wonderful verses that we've talked about. Surely some have hit you as special. And
is it the most quoted book from the Old Testament?
It's the one Jesus quoted from the most. The most quoted verse is Psalms. The most quoted book is Psalms, but Isaiah is the one he quoted from most. Okay. So let me give you an example of where Isaiah sees this returning community that's going to return from exile that hadn't happened yet. Jesus came, and he conquered death, and we had that wonderful resurrection, ascension, and his glorious reign now in heaven. So we have the now. Jesus is reigning. So this people have been saved, and they're back in Jerusalem. But they also have a not yet. They're not perfect. They're still sinners. So they're existing. God has saved. And so we come back to our world now, and Jesus is hidden from most people. They don't see him. And our world is even more sinful as it just goes down this spiral of sins that Paul pointed out to us in Romans 1, 18 through 32. So as in a particularly think of Logan and our families and places like that. Well, we'll pray it sets him free at some point. So, but with all that, this is where this group is that Isaiah is foreseeing. They're in that stage where they're still sinful. They're still hostile to God. So this is what Isaiah is going to be talking about. So I want to remind you that I was going to bring up 56, but now I'm not. Okay, so 57. The righteous perish. This is what we did last week because we got up to verse 12. The righteous perish, and no one ponders in his heart. So here he's talking about, you know, this community that is divided. Nobody's looking at why the righteous perish. Okay? And then we're going to skip, and he's going to talk about, but you, verse 3, come here, you sons of a sorceress, you offspring of adulterers and prostitutes. Whom are you mocking? And so they've gone from having had righteous people with them who've died and they haven't even mourned them to now they're actively mocking and they're actively turning against God and what they know is true. Okay, so that's where we're going when we get to 12. So now verse 12. God is saying, and he said in verse 11, do you not fear me? They do not fear God as God. What do we see in our world? Do we see our world fearing God as God? No, we don't. So when he starts with, I will expose, this means I will declare. Your righteousness and your works. So righteousness here is, and in verses 12 and 13, people can drift very far indeed from the Lord and still assume that they are righteous. And so when he says, I'm going to expose your righteousness, he doesn't mean I'm going to expose what you've done that is righteous. He's going to expose the hypocrisy of what they say is righteous. Remember, this is who he's talking to, people who think they're righteous, but they're not, who wandered from him, who are part of this mixture of the righteous and the compromisers. So how do you see that today where you see people who think they're righteous? And remember, righteousness here is what? How do we define righteousness and being righteous? Okay, come here. All right, I want both of you to say it. First of all, Adrian, doing right, and the right and being right is the character of God. The character of God is our standard of what is right. It is not a list of rules. When we look at what is right, we look at God. God is right himself. It is not that he sets up what's right. God himself is right. And so it is his character. And so what he says about what is right is our standard. because it always goes back to who he is. So my symbol for righteousness is an R with a cross. And so this right takes me back to that's what the character is. And now I have to write out the whole word. So that's what this means. So this characterizes who God is. And so he's going to expose the fact that their righteousness is not who God is. And their works is what they do. It's their behavior. And so in their hypocrisy for righteousness and their works that are part of that hypocrisy, that are look at me, what they do is not acceptable to him, because righteous works would be in accordance with what was acceptable to God. And he's saying they are not. And then he goes on to say, they will not benefit you. And so how awful it would be to hear that. That it will not benefit you. So it's sort of like the voice of God is going to call out these false works and their behavior, and they're not going to benefit them. So it's going to be exposed out loud and in public. And when you cry out for help, this word for cry out is shriek. So you're going to shriek for help. And there is nothing more dreadful than that the Lord should have us at the mercy of our own choices. And the fact that they're going to shriek is the first hint of this coming judgment. Imagine what it's going to be like if he stood up and said, Vicki, here's how far you fall. Here's what you do that you want approval of people and not just me. I mean, this is going to be horrible. And then he said, let your collection of idols save you. So we're going back now to the false religions. But it's not really right here at the beginning. Last chapter, we talked about Baal worship. Remember, we talked about child sacrifice. We talked about the lust among the trees. So this is all flowing from chapter 56. And he's coming back and saying, okay, let's see how much that benefits you. Let's go back to that. The wind will carry them all off. They are so fragile that even the wind can threaten them. Whereas, you know, God rides the wind. A mere breath will blow them away. But the man who makes me his refuge, and to make him his refuge, love this, means trust in him. And this is the faith that brings security. In the contrast between wind that is going to blow these idols away, that it'll only take a breath, now you've got this refuge. Nothing is going to shake this faith. This is going to be permanent. It is going to have access to the Lord's presence, which comes next, because he says, you will inherit the land and you will possess my holy mountain. To possess the holy mountain is access to his presence. You'll be able to come in front of me. As opposed to what? Looking at God and die. You will be in my presence. You will be permitted. And inherit the land is permanent tenure. Think how good that sounds if you've been in exile. Or if you've been threatened with exile. This is going to be yours. For this is what the high and lofty one says. To be the high and lofty one is what the Lord is in himself, and what he is in relationship to everyone else. Oh, wait, I skipped a verse. I skipped verse 14. Whoops. Sorry. I'm going, God, there was more to that. Let's see. Here it is. No, I did it. I'm dying to get past this part. Okay, I went past this part. And it will be said, build up and prepare the road. Remove the obstacles out of the way of all my people. So, and whose people? It's his people. And what does he want to do? He wants that built up. So, and it shall be said, this is meaning the Lord will build the road. I love that idea. He wants to build a road to himself. Remove the obstacles out of the way of my people. So this road is to be uncluttered. It is to be a straight road to himself. So from all of their sins, now there should be a road to himself. Okay, better. Okay. Four, this is what the high and lofty one says. The relationship of God to himself and to everyone else. Because he's high above all people and he's lofty. Do we think of him like that when we go to him? Is he just our buddy? But he is a high and lofty one, isn't he? And so now the Lord is going to speak of himself. He who lives forever, whose name is holy, I live in a high and holy place. So he lives forever. He is eternal. Whose name is holy. You know, there's so much in a name. I hope that when you look at this and you write it in your notes, that you capitalize that word, name, because it is who he is, and his name is above every other name. I start capitalizing things in my notes so that I will be honoring him and looking back. So it just kind of drives me crazy that it's not capitalized. It's my own predilection here. But also with him who is contrite and lowly is spirit. God is not just living forever and being holy. He also comes down. He condescends. And this condescension goes from his height and his being holy to someone who is low, who is contrite. To be contrite means to be crushed. And lowly in spirit. And this lowly in spirit means to be at the bottom of life's heap. And you know, before you think that that really is speaking of someone else, there are many sadnesses, there are many losses that put us at the bottom of life's heap. Many different places in our lives where we are in that place and where God speaks to us and where, because he's the high and lofty one, he builds a road to that place in our lives. The context where a sinful people is where a sinful people can come to a holy God, and in Isaiah's book, this can only be pointing to the priestly work of the servant. So I building the road is the servant building the road. Who is the servant of God? It's Jesus. It is. So whether contrite or lowly, it is not the Lord's intention to leave them that way, but to revive his people. He doesn't leave us low and contrite. Because the next verse says, to revive him, to revive the spirit of the lowly. And he speaks of his purpose in renewal and the characteristics of his family. So he's going to revive the spirit of the lowly. Here's the lowly again. But what are the lowly? The lowly are contrite. They are repentant. They're not arrogant. So in order to be able to come into this presence of God, you have to be repentant. So against the background of the servant's work of satisfaction, Isaiah is not explaining how this is going to happen, but he affirms that God intends to bring people into his household by satisfying his law and his holy nature. And isn't that exactly what Jesus did? I will not accuse forever. Now, this is left out of your NIV. But it is in the Hebrew for. For meaning because. This is an explanation of how God will revive the lowly because he won't accuse forever. I will not always be angry. And it is almost 10:30. So I want to stop right here because I want to make one point. We talk about evil. Evil is the absence of good. So evil is not an actual thing. You can't point at this table and say this is evil. But you can point at good because good is God. Good has a permanence to it. It has a concrete presence to it. We know what good is. You eat something and it tastes good. If it doesn't have good taste, it tastes bad. Maybe you need to add more salt or sugar. But you can change that taste to good. Good is a something. Evil is not. Evil is an absence of something. And so there's really not a darkness. It's an absence of light. So we come over here and we talk about God who's going to come and not accuse forever, nor will he always be angry. What is the not being accused forever is to be forgiven by God. That is really the something that you want. You don't want the nothingness of having turned against that for a nothingness. For a nothingness that your own will, which is going to be nothing. Because God said in the beginning, everything is good. So how does evil come into the world? There is the absence, the rejection of what is good. And the rejection of what is good is what is evil. And so in what God is going to accuse, what he would be angry at, is the rejection of what he has created. And the acceptance and the submission to his will. So all of this is bound up in good and evil. So in the Christian faith, there is not an evil force that's equal to the good force, and that they're in contention and that they're fighting. There is only good, and the rejection of that good is evil. And where we look today at where Sue Mitchell is in the presence of that full light and that full good. And I think we can all go celebrate that wonderful life that she lived in front of us. Yeah, and I mean, I told Taffy, I said, God, I'm so jealous of Sue. Yeah. So with that, we need to go. And so I'm going to pray for us before we leave. And I'll see you next weekend. Next week, we'll also finish 57 and maybe get to